Welcome to the latest edition of the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast, brought to you by Qubit, the trusted experts in analytics. Our goal is to cut through the jargon and hype around analytics and data science and share practical advice to guide you on your analytics journey. You can find us at qubit.com, that's Q-U-E-B-I-T.com. Thank you for joining me today. I'm A.G. Tan.
Wouldn't it be great if a company could predict to a high degree of accuracy how much demand there will be for their goods and services? For example, suppose I manufacture and distribute some cool kitchen gadget. If I know what the demand for my gadget will be and when that demand will be, then I will know how much to manufacture, how many factories I need, what my inventory level should be, how many people I should hire, and so on. After all, you don't want to make more than you can sell, but you certainly don't want to squander opportunity by making less than you can sell. Companies try to predict demand all the time, but the game is doing it accurately. And then you can layer on, what if I grow the sales team, or find a new channel, or invest in marketing? Can we get an accurate prediction of what impact these actions will have? And how much effort is it worth anyway? This is a fundamental problem of supply chain planning, and it's today's topic. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. This is A.G. Tan, your host. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Dan Barrett, who is Qubit's Advanced Analytics Technical Sales Manager. And you're going to get to know Dan in this conversation. What I can tell you so far is that he has been around the block a few times, and we're really delighted to have him with us today. So, hello, Dan.
Hello.
So, Dan, you told me that you want to talk about lean forecasting today. So, can you please tell us all what you mean by lean forecasting, and frankly, what qualifies you to talk about it?
Great. Thank you, AG. I spent many years as a finance leader in a manufacturing organization and ran the demand planning forecasting process. And I was obviously an end user of that forecast. In addition, I spent many years developing demand planning applications and just can't come to find out that, you know, a collaborative method of looking at demand where you've got a base level forecasting, you have marketing and sales and finance and management overrides, don't necessarily produce the most accurate forecast. And so I started looking at, well, how can we measure this? Is there a way that we can approach demand forecasting from a lean standpoint or a Six Sigma type standpoint where we can measure the accuracy of that demand forecast and measure how much value add is contributed to that forecast by these multiple touches to that process? And so I became a student of this lean forecasting or lean demand forecasting process. And that's something I'm very passionate about and something that I'd like to, you know, teach other people about and have them benefit from that experience.
So are you sort of saying that, you know, in many organizations, when you say there's this layer on of, you know, there's the base forecast and then the marketing people add on and then management add on, are these people all just going by their guts a lot of their time? And is that part of the problem?
It is some part of the problem. There's certainly, top-down adjustments to the forecast that are more evangelical, if we put it that way, is that, you know, it came from the top, so it's got to be, the best way to look at the forecast. Or it could be sales being more optimistic of their sales opportunities. Or they could, at the beginning of the forecasting process, sales could be undercutting the forecast in order so that they can make the quota more easily and generate more revenue for themselves. Finance could be looking at it from a pure financial standpoint, and marketing could certainly is usually very optimistic that they can generate more leads, more sell-through of their products. Certainly product marketing will never forecast that their product is going to fail. So, you know, all these different touches to that forecast can certainly add, sometimes beneficial ads, sometimes very detrimental ads to the forecasting process. So how do we measure that? It is something that we'll talk about further in this podcast.
All right. Thank you. So can you provide a high-level description of the problem, maybe an illustrative one, so our audience and myself and I could relate to it better?
Sure. So I think the best way to do that, AG, is to let's give a definition of demand. And so I like to consider demand is what customers want, when they want it, and sometimes with the added proviso at a price they're willing to pay, along with any other products they may want to acquire at the same time. So a good forecast of demand far enough into the future allows an organization to invest in all and only the facilities, equipment, materials, and staffing it needs to most profitably fulfill that demand. So, but here's the catch. Forecasting is a huge waste of management time. And let me explain what I mean about that. Many organizations believe improving forecast accuracy is the goal. So they spend a lot of time on that effort. Often an inverse relationship is seen though. The more effort and the more touches that an organization has on a forecast, a lot of times the more negatively it affects the forecast accuracy. So you have sales, finance, marketing, management overrides, other inputs to the plan, supply chain that don't always add accuracy. And organizations typically don't measure the value add of those touches to the forecast. And so also, organizations can spend a lot of time on the stretch idea or the nirvana of unconstrained true demand. And so my proposal is that let's measure that accuracy through what Qubit has defined around forecast value add. So is a touch adding value to the forecast or is it detrimental to the forecast? And that's what we can talk further about.
So are you saying that, well, it sounds almost like you're talking about the 80-20 rule, yeah, that, you know, at some point there's a law of diminishing returns, right? You're under pressure to come up with a more accurate forecast because that's the holy grail. But the more energy you put into it and the more people are being asked to contribute to it, at some point, it becomes busy work. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Exactly. Exactly. There's a point where, you know, just continuing to touch the forecast, it just doesn't add any more accuracy to it. And it's just a waste of time for management and analysts within the organization.
So just getting back to forecast value add though, I mean, is that essentially a matter of measuring what actually happened after the fact against what people thought was going to happen? Because you would think that people would do that, right? That they would measure the accuracy of their forecast. And the reality is that once reality has happened, and let's say we forecasted that we were going to sell so much in March, and now March is over, we can go back and see how good our forecast is. That's a really important analysis to do. Is that what you mean by measuring forecast value add?
Well, from that so there's multiple versions of the forecast. And this is one area that Qubit will actually, you know, allow the organization to keep as many different versions as they like. But one version of the forecast is, say, that baseline statistical forecast. Or maybe it's a naive forecast. It's a, you know, just a simple moving average or a random walk. A random walk forecast is just basically taking the last month's actuals or last period actuals and putting that as your forecast for the next period. So, you know, if that naive forecast is better than a very detailed statistical forecast or any additional additions to that forecast, then why do it? You know, it doesn't add any value. It just takes up management time.
Right.
So by having, say, the baseline statistical forecast, maybe a naive forecast as a version, and then any of the touches to the forecast version, so maybe the sales plan touches, the marketing touches, the finance touches, you can measure, and then when the actuals come in, you can measure how accurate they were. Did they add value or did they not add value to the baseline forecast or to that naive forecast?
So then over time, what do you then do with that knowledge? Do you stop wasting management time on everything beyond the naive or the baseline forecast? Or do you do something else?
Exactly. So, you know, if sales or finance or marketing or anybody else that touches the forecast are not adding value to the forecast and they're actually creating more inaccuracy in the forecast, then why do it, right? It's just wasting time. It's wasting effort. It's wasting resources when they could be focusing on much more value-add activities.
Like selling, right?
Exactly. Or managing costs, or developing new marketing programs, or whatever those may be, right?
Yes.
So why do that? Now, there are instances where I see that, maybe market by identifying these areas that you're not adding accuracy, you can identify the areas where you may add accuracy. So in this case, there may be predictors that we identify in a statistical forecast that really add value to that forecast. Maybe it's promotional spend. Maybe it's inventory levels. It could be a multitude. It could be seasonal factors that we add to a statistical forecast. So getting those predictors, identifying, you know, those people in the organization that have figured out what those predictors are and are actually adding value to a forecast, let's capture that information, include it in the baseline statistical forecasting, and then we've captured that IP in the organization, and now we can include it in the forecast rather than, you know, having somebody touch it.
So thanks, Dan, for that explanation. I'm really intrigued, though, by the baseline statistical forecast idea, because we haven't really defined it. And you talked about a naive forecast being, you know, as you say, it could just be a projection from last year with a 10% uplift or something like that. But then when you say statistical, that's where we're getting into the cool technology part of things, right? Where you could be using a predictive analytics-based system or even something that involves AI to generate a starting point forecast. And perhaps the first version of it, and again, I'll give you an opportunity to correct me if I'm wrong, but perhaps the first version of it is something that looks at historical data and does a statistical linear regression on what's happened in the past. And then perhaps later on, you mentioned causal factors. That's where you might then layer in things like weather, if you sell umbrellas, right? Weather or demographics or whatever it is. So do I have that right? Is that the kind of thing you mean when you say statistical forecast?
Yeah, that's correct, AJ. So, to not get too deep into the weeds, but yes, we would look at historical demand. And demand can be, you know, there can be different definitions of demand. So, if you're a manufacturer, you might want to look at shipment demand, which could be very lumpy. So when you ship to a particular, say, let's say Walmart, as a manufacturer, I may ship, you know, once every 2 weeks or once every month, and that demand will be very lumpy, right? Or I could look at demand going through the sell-through demand going through, Walmart, which could be much more smooth, right? Or I could look at other different types of demand. So if I'm a distributor, maybe I'm looking at demand through, from my website, to retailers that are selling my product. So taking those different models and taking those different levels of demand, we'll use, advanced statistical, algorithms linear regression, moving averages. We'll split out trend and look at events, outliers, and separate the outliers, maybe seasonal patterns, and really take that information to create that baseline forecast that we can then compare to. We'll do some holdout of actuals and compare that statistical forecast to how those actuals, those holdout actuals look like, so that we can see the accuracy of that model, and then also identify the predictors that may add more accuracy to that forecast. Does that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I really like about what you're describing, and which obviously I know is how Qubit likes to implement demand planning solutions, is that there is a notion of accountability, right? So even if you have a predictive model or, generating that baseline statistical forecast, which some people might feel, that's a black box. I don't know if I can trust it. But because you have this forecast value add notion where people, humans, can go in and adjust it or add it or propose an alternative, and that we're measuring the efficacy of those alternatives or those extra layers plus the baseline against what actually happens over time. That way, there is this sense of, okay, I can go back and check that this actually was working, and that this actually did add value, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, I'll go back to, why spend management time? Why spend analyst time in contributing to a forecast if you're not adding value? I mean, it's just a waste of time.
Yeah. So besides the waste of management time, because I understand it. I mean, I've been on that side of the fence where I had to, create a forecast, and there's a lot of pressure to get it right. And so sometimes when we're under pressure, we just try harder, even if we're not really basing it on anything more factual, right? But besides that extra management effort, there are also other ways of doing demand planning out there, other systems that help with demand planning. And how do you see, how would you compare them with what we would typically do, and where might they have some failings?
That's a great question. I see, a myriad of planning systems out there that, don't measure forecast value add. It's all about collaboration and getting more people input into the forecast, which is, again, not necessarily the best methodology. It's certainly not the most lean way of going about forecasting. Another area that I see a failing is where a demand planning system promotes a best fit model, and best fit models can take multiple forecasts. Basically, what they do is they take multiple forecast methods. So they take statistical methods, moving average, linear regression, maybe a straight line, an average of some sort. And they'll take multiple forecast methods and then they back test them to see which method produces the highest accuracy. Well, this method works adequately for smooth demand products, but not so great for fashion items or lumpy demand items or seasonal items or newly introduced items. How do they fit a best fit model into a new product that an organization is introducing? Another area is end of life cycle items. So how do you, you take a best fit model when you're trying to run out an item or it has short life cycles? So an example, if you were to take, and I did this in a spreadsheet, if I took a random sample of numbers between 0 and 1,000, if you used an average, what do you think the average would be for random numbers between 0 and 1,000, AG?
I'm guessing it would be 1,000 divided by 2.
So exactly, it's about 500. That's going to be your best fit, right? That's a great fit, right? Or it's not necessarily a good fit, but it's accurate, right?
Right.
So if you were to use a linear regression model on those random numbers between 0 and 1,000, you would create a pretty good fit. But it's not usually, you don't usually create an accurate forecast on that, right?
Right.
And then if you use a moving average, you'd get a better fit. But again, you wouldn't produce an accurate forecast because you don't know what that next random number is, right?
Right.
So this is one of the areas that I really feel like, you know, taking a best fit model is not necessarily the way to produce, you know, a highly accurate forecast.
So how would we deal with those kinds of outlier situations, like the introduction of a new product for which we had no history?
Right. So the best approach is to generate a statistical forecast that's very accurate and measure and do holdout and measure the accuracy of that forecast by taking, you know, by separating the demand or the unit demand, you know, into seasonal trend or trend and seasonal trend and then outliers and modeling each of those differently. And then looking at proven predictors as levels. So bringing in predictors like ad spend, like promotions, like pricing, causal factors like demographics and weather, and bringing those into the model and see and testing them to see, you know, are they do they add accuracy, and are they predictors that we can use as levers to move the needle on demand? And that's how we approach it.
Right. Yeah, that's a great explanation. Thank you.
Let us suppose that one of our listeners is struggling with the problem of getting an accurate demand forecast and needs one in order to optimize their supply chain. Do you have any advice you can share?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll start from the general and then talk about things that we have seen from some of our implementations. So forecasts will always explain the past better than they predict the future. Do you agree?
I agree.
So if that statement is true, which I think everybody would agree that forecasts will always explain the past better than they predict the future, then that means don't get too overconfident in your forecast. You'll never know when you'll have an outlier event. And that outlier event could be, you know, Katrina. It could be, not only weather, but it could be an outlier event caused internally by, you know, promotion or end of quarter sales, you know, contest, those kind of things. So don't
You're
get
right.
overconfident.
Or
in
a tariff war.
I'm sorry?
Or a trade war.
Exactly. Tariffs. Exactly. So, so use the forecast value add. Right. The forecast value add metric allows an organization to identify the waste and inefficiency in its forecasting process, you know, for each touch to that forecasting process. It's a way of evaluating each step and the participant in the forecasting process. Right. So the objective is to identify and eliminate non-value adding activities. And so let's just talk a little bit about, you know, some of the successes we've seen. So by implementing a system like Qubit Galileo, a predictive demand planning system, we will bring in a good statistical forecasting system, right? And so you can safely let the system do most of the work. And then our experience is that organizations tend to touch the forecast too much, creating an unfavorable forecast value add. And some of the things that we've seen has been, a 50% reduction in budget cycles. An average of 60% overall reduction in annual planning hours. You know, the hours that, you know, people and management and analysts have to take to actually create this planning, demand planning forecast. A 50% improvement in forecast accuracy. And then certainly not least, increased sales by 10%. And that can be, I'd say that's probably a floor. So these are the kind of things that we're seeing, really looking at that forecast value add as a way to reduce the costs of the demand planning process and increase accuracy.
So when you're talking about increasing sales as a result of having, you know, forecast accuracy, is that because the sales team then has more time to focus on other things than doing forecasts?
Well, that could be part of it. But the biggest thing is that you have lower stockouts, you have better inventory levels, you're able to generate promotional spend based on a very accurate forecast. Those are things that impact more than just saving time. It's really about getting more accurate forecasts so that you can service the customer and make the customer more, drive customer satisfaction and drive increased profits.
Oh, I see. So basically it really feeds into the whole supply chain and operational end of it, right? Because if you have a clearer, more accurate idea of how much you need to have, let's say, on your shelves, then, and you trust those numbers, then that can then drive behaviors and decisions that you might make in terms of getting your suppliers in line, finding alternate suppliers if you need to, and optimizing other parts of your business so that you can meet that forecasted demand. So is that more of what we're talking about here?
Exactly. I mean, the old saying, when I started with IBM as a salesperson back in, gosh, I don't want to say the date, 1984. So, the first thing my sales manager says is that nothing happens at IBM until you sell something, right? So, getting that demand forecast correct drives the rest of the organization, stocking, supply chain. It's the beginning of an overall integrated business planning process,
right?
That many organizations are trying to get to, or some organizations call it sales and operations planning, or S&OP.
Yeah.
Other organizations call it integrated business planning, but it's all that demand forecast. Without getting that correct, the rest of the process falls apart.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? How obvious that is once you realize it.
Exactly.
And I guess it explains why people get so anxious about it. One other final question. Typically in your experience, when we implement these kinds of systems for our customers, does it take a while before they start trusting it?
It depends on the, I guess the organization, whether or not it's, a very politically oriented forecast, right? So it's a smaller company where the company president says, hey, this is the forecast. You guys figure out how to go out and make it happen, right?
Right.
That can be just an exercise in spreading that, usually, which is a revenue forecast down to units and then across hierarchies, whether that's stores or salespeople or whatever. I mean, that's, and I'm not saying that's bad, because there has to be a direction from the top as to how much revenue we're going to generate.
Right. Right.
So, but that can be a challenge. And there's other, instances within the organization that, create, roadblocks. So, how onerous is there, what the number of SKUs they might have, right? The number of stores they may have, the assortment of that product down to the store, whether their products are fashion oriented and very short time life cycles, all these different variables will point to how fast we can implement a predictive demand planning system, along with implementing the FVA, the forecast value add part of the system too. But typically we see, getting the statistical forecast correct and the way we approach it will dramatically decrease the amount of time it takes to get to success.
No, definitely. And I can, you know, and I also know that sometimes we do this in multiple phases, right? So there might be a first version of the statistical forecast that does not take into account as many causal factors because, you know, perhaps, you know, it takes a little bit of time to figure out what those are, but you're still better off than you were before. And then over time, you can layer on additional information and make it better and better.
Well, and exactly. And we'll be measuring that forecast value add all the time. So if the statistical forecast is not better than a naive forecast, you know, a simple moving average or a random walk, then, you know, why even, or you have very, you know, very smooth demand that you can easily just apply a simple moving average to, you know, we can identify those type of, you know, those products very rapidly. And we'll focus our efforts on those products that are very hard to forecast, right?
Right.
You know, and really drive success in those areas.
No, absolutely. That makes sense. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your lean forecasting story. And if anyone listening would like to hear more from Dan or from anyone else at Qubit, please reach out to us at info@qubit.com. That's info@qubit.com. Thank you for listening.
Great. Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. We would love to hear from you. Do you have anything you would like to ask Qubit about analytics? You can tweet us at AskQubit or email us at info@qubit.com. That's info@qubit.com. Until next time.